Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios. And today, the studio is Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena. Predators in action tonight, taking on the Anaheim Ducks. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. Joining us now is Mitch Light of The Athletic, college football junkie. Mitch, we had a wild weekend in college football. Massive blowouts, coaches were fired, but I want to start with what we're going to find out tonight, and that is the new college football playoff rankings. And of course, right now in November, they don't really matter, but looking at what Georgia did, and it was a statement win over Ole Miss after beating Missouri, who just put the beat down on Tennessee. Mitch, I feel like Missouri should be the number one team in the country. What do you think?
Missouri or Georgia?
Did I say Missouri?
I know, yes. Missouri beat LSU, so it must be awesome. So, but just if we wrote it, every team that beat LSU.
No. LSU beat Missouri, Mitch. LSU beat Missouri. Don't you forget it. I meant Georgia.
So, yes. And
thank you.
That is a very good question and good point. Now, if you do a poll and you're a voter and you have Ohio State number one last week and they beat Michigan State, who's not very good. Sorry, Derek.
Hey, I'm accepting it, man.
Yeah. I'm sometimes going to look in the mirror and just say, you know what? Not happening this year. And so then you say, okay, how do you move them down? But if the College Football Playoff Committee, which claims they rip up their rankings every week and they look at, everyone's resume updated, which in theory is how you should do rankings, then there's a rational argument for putting Georgia ahead. So that's the argument why Georgia would be ahead. If your argument is just, well, there's only one more week, and it's only one more week since, one more week of data, and Ohio State won big, how do you move them down? Like you said, Caroline, it doesn't really matter, but I think that will be interesting to watch. And I'm just curious about Michigan. Michigan, obviously a really nice win over Penn State, but you also, saw not some warts. There's some questions about them offensively. I don't think they'll move down, but is there an argument that Florida State has a better resume than Michigan, even after Michigan went to Penn State? Probably there is. So that's maybe something to watch.
That's exactly what I wanted to ask you about next is Michigan. And I know that Tony Petitti, the head of the College Football Playoff Committee, already said that, look, we're not going to take into consideration the investigations into Jim Harbaugh, but that was before Jim Harbaugh was suspended. I don't think the College Football Playoff wants to get into being a judiciary committee and getting involved into investigations, but do you think the CFP should or will now take into account what is going on behind closed doors with Michigan with the investigation of the sign stealing?
Well, if he's suspended just the regular season, which right now looks like it will be, unless there's some injunction or whatever the term is, then I don't think the playoff committee should do anything. Like the only thing, I don't necessarily agree with this line of thinking, but the only thing you could do is, okay, let's say they lose to Penn State and he wasn't there. Oh, well, they get the head coach back, so maybe we look at them differently. But they won. So it's, and there's no way they would forgive a loss just because Jim Harbaugh wasn't there. So I bet the playoff committee would, if you gave him some truth serum, would probably like to see Michigan lose to Ohio State so they don't have to evaluate Michigan in that regard, because I don't think a one-loss Michigan that does not win its division would make it. But I believe what they say, that they're not considering what's going on, behind the scenes or looking at Michigan differently because they may or may not have had an advantage with the science deal.
Now, Alabama, Mitch, do you think – this is what they had envisioned for Jalen Milroe, because it seems like every week he's getting a tad bit better. And had they not had, because this is what Nick Saban does. He schedules hard games at the beginning of the season, or at least that first one, and their hard game was against Texas, and they ended up losing that game. But after that, you started to see, even though they did play a little quarterback, shuffle there, eventually they settled on Jalen Milroe, and he's starting to be that quarterback that I think everybody envisioned him, at least in Tuscaloosa. He was a highly recruited quarterback, and now you're starting to see why this guy was a five-star guy.
obviously this is what they hoped he could be, but my guess is this is not really what they expected. If they thought this is what he was, they probably would not have been so active in the transfer portal after spring practice. They probably wouldn't have benched him for the South Florida game. Now, you could argue that that's maybe was a motivating factor. That's, you know, he sitting out for a game helped him. I get that. But if you really thought he was your guy, you would want to get him as many reps as possible. You wouldn't have benched him. So I think they are very, very, very pleasantly surprised, thrilled with where he is right now. But my guess is they did not. Like, he's a third-year junior. I don't think he's going to the NFL. I don't think he's NFL ready or anything like that. My guess is if you ask Nick Saban in the spring who's going to be your starting quarterback in 2024, he would have no idea. He'd be like, I don't know if the guy's on the roster right now. But if you ask him right now, he's like, we've got our guy. Jalen Miller is going to be our starter next year. So I guess my answer is they did not necessarily expect him to be this good.
Now, Texas took the steps that, Texas A&M, excuse me, has taken the steps that maybe other programs wouldn't have taken, especially with a massive contract to a coach and them knowing they still have to pay him for the next 4 or 5 years. Some universities choose to let it play out a couple more years and then make that switch. But A&M has had enough. They end up parting ways with Jimbo. Who do you think is the next head coach at A&M? And is A&M built and ready for a Urban Meyer type of coach?
I don't think it'll be an Urban Meyer. I mean, we know they want to take a big swing.
Yes.
My guess would be, my choice would be Mike Elko. He was the defensive coordinator down there. He's been in a lot of different types of schools. He's recruited at Notre Dame. He's recruited at Wake Forest. He's recruited at Duke. He obviously knows what he's doing as a head coach. I mean, if you watch Duke play this year, now they're struggling right now. They're on their third-string quarterback. Riley Leonard's hurt. But they almost beat North Carolina in a game they had no business winning. They beat Wake Forest 2 weeks ago with almost no offense, and they just gutted it out. They got outgained almost 2-1. They play with a certain toughness, and they play with tremendous, like, they look like a great team speed on defense, and, you know, they don't have the most highly recruited kids, and he has really overachieved there. So I've been very impressed with what he's done there. Now, the question you have to ask Mike Elko, and we never want to know what makes a guy tick. Like, he could be just, you know what, I've been a coaching lifer. I'm the head coach in the ACC. There's not a ton of pressure on me. It's a private school. I don't know what he makes, but after this year, he'll probably be making $4 or $5 million. He might look and say, I don't need that mess down there. I've been there 2 years. I know what can happen down there if you go 9-3. Like, that's not good enough. So I'm not saying he would turn them down, but I think we can't just assume that the guys at the top of their list would be interested. Like, Lance Leipold at Kansas has said that, you know, he's Kansas for life. But who knows, a guy like that, again, he's been in the junior college ranks, and he's come up, and the fact that he has a chance to coach at a school that can win a national championship, maybe that's too much for him to turn down. But it's definitely a very, very attractive job.
Here's my chaos scenario, Mitch. And this isn't going to happen.
You love the chaos.
I love the chaos. This isn't going to happen, Kelly? But Brian I mean, Kelly? But money is involved.
Brian Kelly.
Don't you poach my guy. We already did the poaching. Mike Norvell.
Yes.
The Tallahassee to Texas pipeline. If Texas A&M takes a Florida State coach for the second time in a row, that is my chaos scenario. Or Lincoln Riley.
Yeah. Norvell, I 5 years ago, you say, well, this is a dumb point, because I would say 5 years ago, why do you leave Florida State for Texas A&M? Well, someone actually did that. But my point was, that was sort of before the financial divide became so great. Like, the reason you leave a Florida State is now because they're in the ACC, and you don't know what their long-term future is going to be. But I think he's got it really rolling at Florida State, so I would be surprised. I've seen, you know, Lincoln Riley is – he obviously coached at Oklahoma. Things aren't going great at USC. I don't see him jumping ship after 2 years there, but I don't think that's 100% out of the question. I'll put it that way.
Mitch Light with us from The Athletic. Mitch, do you think this is a good time to play Georgia if you're Tennessee? You're at home. You just got whipped. Maybe Georgia lets the guard down a little bit after Georgia really flexed against Ole Miss. I feel like maybe you can talk yourself into Tennessee's got a shot here.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not.
You're not buying it.
You know, I'm not buying it.
You're not buying it.
Kirby Smart is so focused. Like, you know, I guess they have not played great every game this year, so you can't say they've been at their best every year. But from the Kirby Smart, Nick Saban, like, treats, like, those guys just seem that they find a new way every week to get them motivated. Like, I'll counter it. Like, if you're Georgia, this might be a good time to be playing Tennessee. You could argue, oh, they're mad, they're coming off a bad loss, but, like, they didn't play very well. They didn't look very good. So, like, I think Georgia could say, hey, this is a good time. Tennessee is down. Let's get on them early. Let's get the crowd out, and then we can, you know, kind of have our way. So I see what you're saying. You're always looking for, like, when's the best time, when's the worst time, but I don't think it's ever a good time to play Georgia.
Another strange one, of course, they're playing Chattanooga here, but Alabama's now got the hay in the barn. They're going to be in the SEC championship game. Is this arguably Nick Saban's best coaching job in a long time? Or do you look and say, look, yeah, you think so?
Yeah, I mean, just now we might have been wrong, but like a month ago we're saying, okay, where are they better than they've been in the past on offense? Definitely not quarterback. This is like a month ago. Running backs are fine, not elite. Offensive line had some issues. Who are the difference makers at wide receiver? And I think those questions still really apply, except maybe at the quarterback position. Let's not get carried away. Jalen Milroe's having a great run here, but he's not Bryce Young. He's not Mac Jones. Like, at least, you know, Mac Jones is the year he started. So clearly he has pushed the right buttons, and they have gotten a lot better. Because they're, you know, on a great offensive roll. But, it's, you know, sometimes it's hard to say what's the best. Like, how are we going to sit here and say a year that they won the national championship, like, he didn't do a better job? But obviously we're kind of doing it in relative to how much talent they have.
Is Missouri and their situation, are we talking maybe coach of the year here if they can win the last two games? Like, what they're looking at a really nice bowl game if they can win out.
Yeah, I think, in fact, I was looking at our Stu Mandel does our projections, bowl projections, and I think he had Missouri in a New Year's Six Bowl. You know, looking around the league, I mean, for the SEC, you know, it's hard to say. Maybe it's Nick Saban if they win the league, but as far as expectations, and I think it's clearly Missouri. I mean, they haven't – there's nothing fluky about what they've done this year. They have been very, very good, love their balance on offense. Cook has been very good. You know, they're good wide receiver. So, yeah, I mean Drinkwitz has done a really good job. So right now, I think it would have to be between Nick Saban and Drinkwitz for Coach of the Year in the SEC.
And along the same lines, Louisville's at Miami this weekend. It's interesting. Miami is sitting there at 6-4, and they're, I think, still a point favorite over Louisville, who's sitting there at 9-1. But we can all remember Jeff Brohm, nice job at Western Kentucky. There was a time where it was reported, and it was an accurately reported, that Jeff Brohm was going to be the next coach at Tennessee. Remember that whole absolute firestorm and crazy go round when they were trying to replace, Butch Jones.
Yeah.
But here he is now back at his alma mater, 9-1. Did you see that coming? Did you see Louisville as a fringe top 10 team this quick?
No, I mean, I don't think anyone did. And yeah, he's done a great job there. And, you know, I kind of applaud the way that he went about this. You know, he is doing a good job at Purdue. Louisville came after him a couple years ago when they hired Scott Satterfield. I think he clearly wanted to go, but he was like, I've only been at Purdue 2-3 years here. It's just not the right time. I'm not going to, like, kind of jump ship right away. And then it comes open again 3 years later or whenever it was, and he's like, you know what? I think this is the right time. Like, I've done my job at Purdue, and I'm comfortable with my decision now. So I just thought that was an interesting approach. But, yeah, he's done a great job, and he's a very, very good offensive coach. It's interesting you mentioned going to Miami, Miami 1-point favorite. Miami has won, in Mario Cristobal's 2 years there, they've won two ACC home games, both in overtime.
Oh, my gosh.
So they have not been good at home. They've got quarterback issues. You know, they benched Tyler Van Dyke last week. The freshman comes in, Emory Williams, against Florida State. He gets hurt. So now Van Dyke is back in, the veteran, who's really had a disappointing season. So you talk about good times to play teams. I think this might be a good time to play Miami. Again, they don't play well at home. They're coming off an emotional loss to Florida State there. So a good situation for Louisville.
Mitch, how good is this Washington team? Because, I mean, with Penix at quarterback, he's obviously And I guess it leads me to a question, too. Who do you think is the front runner for the Heisman? But this Washington team led by Penix, how good are they? Because we don't get a chance to see much of them because they're out west. They beat a USC team. They've beaten Utah. They've beaten Oregon, Arizona. These teams that Arizona is now ranked in the top 25. If you look at their resume, they have a really tough resume that they basically went in and wreck shopped on a lot of people.
Yeah, I think it's fair to question their overall resume because I'm a big believer in point margin in college football. It's like, you know, I'm not running up the score all that, but if you are consistently like TCU, a slight tangent, like I'm not surprised they're struggling this year. They were very fortunate last year. Give them all the credit in the world, but they had some very close games, some kind of miraculous wins. I'm not saying this Washington team's exactly the same, but they beat Arizona by 7. Great win against Oregon. No excuse. Don't have to say sorry for a 3-point win. But they beat Arizona State by 8. They beat a bad Stanford team by 9, which really Stanford blew the game. They beat USC by 10. Fun game. A Utah offense, which is really struggling, scores 28 against them in the first quarter. They win by 7. So they are kind of living dangerously right now. They've got a very tough game this week at Oregon State, who's playing well. So I would not be shocked if they lost. So they deserve to be ranked where they are, but it's also fair to call into question just how good they are because their defense hasn't been good late and they've been living dangerously. You can't – well, you can, but it's very difficult just to keep winning games by one score.
Yeah, but it's hard because how many teams in the – in the Pac-12, you know, you think of Utah and their defense, but Utah gave up 35 points to Washington. Utah's a tough team, but they've lost their share game. So you look at the Pac-12, and it seems like nobody plays defense in the Pac-12, but they all know how to play offense.
Yep. Fair point. I think when you get to the point where we're talking about you as a national champion, that's when we can find warts. Like all these teams that are in the playoff hunt are really good. So you kind of, what might keep them from winning it? So like big picture, Washington's 10-0, amazing season. Kalen DeBoer doing a great job. But if we're going to talk about as a national championship contender, let's see what maybe they don't do well and why they might not win. Like Oregon, if you look at their resume, other than that head-to-head loss, has played a lot better. Like they go into Utah and just destroy Utah. Oregon to me is the more complete team, but hey, they lost that game. I hope they play again. Oregon, Washington in the Pac-12 championship game. That'll be hard to look past Alabama and Georgia, but I think Oregon, Washington championship game would be really, really fun.
But then that will completely take the Pac-12 out of the playoffs because if Washington lose,
I'd put Oregon in.
Oregon already has a loss.
And if Oregon beats Washington and beats them soundly, losing by 3 points on the road to Washington that only had one loss, I would definitely not rule out Oregon. A lot of things.
But what do you say to a Michigan or Ohio State who loses then in their championship game or who loses the head-to-head matchup? You know, they can say, well, we lost to Ohio State, who's the number one or number two team in the country. If Ohio State loses, they can say the same thing about Michigan.
Oregon, in my opinion, a one-loss Oregon team that won its Pac-12 championship would have a much better resume than a one-loss Michigan that did not win its division. Michigan's best win would be at Penn State. Oregon would have beaten Washington. They've won at Utah. You know, they beat USC. Better wins on that resume. Now, the thing that Ohio State has going forward, flipping that around, which I still would take Oregon over Ohio State, Ohio State has a win at Notre Dame, which is a good win. It's not a great win. But I think Oregon, one-loss Oregon winning the Pac-12 would be in pretty good shape.
Last one for you, Mitch. Jimbo Fisher. When the hire was made at the time, I thought that was a slam dunk. I thought if Texas A&M knows what they're signing up for in signing him to that long of a deal for that much money, they have the money to do it, and they're willing to pay for the consequences if it doesn't work out. Well, you're bringing in a national championship head coach. But given how much money they signed him to for how long it was and the extension, add on the embarrassing fact that they gave him a blank national championship plaque and they didn't get to a conference championship game. They had one 10-win season under Jimbo Fisher. Was that the worst coaching hire in the history of college football?
Ooh, no, because they have the money to erase it. Like, it doesn't matter to them. And it's not the school right now, it's the boosters. And, like, I was on radio, I do a college station every week, been doing it for years, and I was the host there was making the point. He wasn't, like, making excuses for the school. He's like, I know why it's a story, but why does it matter? Like, they've got the money to erase their mistakes. So this isn't University of Arizona that where the news comes out that they're like $250 million in the hole and all that, and they might have to be cutting sports. So the thing about the Jimbo Jimbo Fisher hire, I'm with you. Like, on paper, that looked at the time really, really good. What we kind of didn't know was that Jimbo, and this might be oversimplification, but was sort of a really good offensive coach that was set in his ways and wasn't really adjusting to the changes in college football. Like, he just seemed like he wanted to run his offense and didn't look around what was working at other – didn't see how Alabama was changing the way it went about its offensive football. Jimbo seemed to be running the same stuff in 2022 that he was in 2010, and you really can't do that. I mean, look at – you know, again, look at Alabama. Look at what Washington does. Look at what Oregon does. It's just very difficult to play that style. And I don't think Jimbo did a very good job adjusting. And he's like, I've got a national championship on my resume. You don't really tell me what to do. And he's a little stubborn, and this is where we are.
Mitch Light of The Athletic. Mitch, appreciate you as always. We'll chat next week.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right, appreciate it. Caroline, Willie, D-Maze, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Game problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.